We're on hold for the Alanya Van Zandt
1 minute until showtime.
With Lindsay Kenny. So please hold for proeftradio.com. Thank you for calling. If you're on the phone, please hold. We'll be starting the show in less than a minute.
Your show will go live in 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Pro EFT Radio with Lindsay Kenny, EFT Master. If you're new to EFT, please visit us at proeft.com after the show to familiarize yourself with meridian tapping. It's important to learn the basics of EFT in order to get the most out of the material we'll be covering in these programs. You'll find a wealth of free resources at proeft.com, including a free starter program that will help you build on a solid foundation for tapping. Now, here's Lindsay.
Hello, everyone. This is Lindsay Kenny, and welcome to our Pro EFT radio show tonight. I am so excited and very honored to have as our guest Alanya Van Zandt. Hello, everyone. This is Lindsay Kenny, and welcome to our Pro EFT radio show tonight. I am so excited and very honored to have as our guest Alanya Van Zandt. Alanya, say hi.
Hi, everybody.
You've got such a great voice. I fell in love with it the first time I heard it. I want to just say a little bit about Alanya, and then we're going to bring her in because there's so much to be said about her. I could do 1 hour just telling you what a wonderful person she is, but I want you guys to experience it yourself. But Alanya and I have done some work together with EFT, and she's been a former student of ours going to the highest level at level 3. But I didn't know at the time that she was kind of famous, but I found out later that she'd been on Oprah many times and has done so many things. There were several people in our class that recognized you, Alanya, and I'm going, what? Who is she? What? I just thought she was a really cool person. I didn't know she was somebody famous. But Alanya's been hailed among the 10 most dynamic public speakers in the United States. That's pretty amazing. And I love this title, a nationally recognized personal development master and spiritual technician. She does a lot of work to support others in their personal growth because heaven knows she has gone through it herself, and there's nothing like having done it to help teach somebody else or to lead somebody else through trauma. And Alanya has had a very, shall we say, challenging life, Alanya?
Yeah, challenging.
And she's written about that very beautifully in her new book, From Broken Pieces. Did I get the title right?
That's it.
Peace, P-E-A-C-E, From Broken Pieces. And we'll learn about how you can get that book later on. Let me bring Alanya in with us now. And I guess the big news of the day, Alanya, is that, one, you're the guest on proeftradio.com. That's the big news. That's the big one. And then also she was on this little show called, was it Oprah something?
Yeah, Oprah.
And that just aired. In fact, I haven't seen it live because I think it's actually airing here in my local time right now. But I've gotten a barrage of emails from people across the country who have seen it and know that I know you. And I have nothing but rave reviews. I went on Twitter and Facebook. Everybody's raving about it. So tell us about your experience. How did you end up on Oprah? And then, what happened?
Well, I was part of her Change Your Life faculty back in 98, 99
mm-hmm.
when she did the show. It was myself and Susie Orman and Dr. Phil.
Good company.
And then because of a simple request that I made, you know, first of all, it all happened so fast. I had been doing my spiritual work and teaching and coaching for probably about 15 years by then. But something, you know, you get so accustomed to the grind, and then something happened that just takes you into a whole other realm. And what happened for me was I wrote a book called In the Meantime, and it became a selection for her book club. Not the prime selection that they were doing on a month, but they used it as a reference book for what they were reading. And so all of a sudden I'm on Oprah. And she asked me to be part of her Change Your Life faculty.
Wow.
And shortly thereafter, I got an offer from another television network, and I turned them down. I said, no, I'm not leaving Harpo. But what I did do was the offer itself made me have a second thought. So I went back to Oprah and I said, listen, I knew I said I would stay and wait a year before we went out, but I'd like to develop my show now. Because I have some fears about standing up on my own. In my brain, in my process, I really just wanted to conquer the fear.
Mm-hmm.
But she heard that as, I'm giving you the platform of the Oprah Winfrey Show, and here you come asking me for more.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
And I mean, I understand it now. Then I was just moving very fast and not familiar with the industry and used a very kind of, I don't want to say aggressive language because it wasn't that at all. But what I told her was, because I got this offer, I rethought our offer, and now I want to renegotiate what we were talking about.
Yeah.
And I can see now how that would be insulting to Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah, and she probably heard something along that line before.
Yeah, you know, probably. Yeah, she has a history of people using her and her platform mm-hmm. to make their lives and then not... just not honor her. The thing is that people thought we were the best of friends. I had been on her show over 22 times, and we had never had a conversation.
Wow,
ever.
Really?
People thought we went to lunch and we hung out, and no, we hadn't.
Huh.
For me, it was this is business, and for her, it was this is business. You know, she had just become, she had a certain way of dealing with her guests. I understand it now, having done television. I didn't understand it then.
Mm-hmm.
So it never dawned on me that Oprah had a care or concern about who I was. Plus, my family pathology, my family historical pattern was that, you know, you work hard, you struggle, you suffer, and don't expect anything from people. So I didn't even realize that she was being incredibly generous to me.
Yeah.
So when I asked her for my show, she got insulted, threw me out.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
And I eventually, a year later, see, people forget the time frame. I was on Oprah 98, 99.
Uh-huh.
I didn't do my own show until 2001
uh-huh.
because I had told the other industry, the other network, no.
Well, did you mention on the show on Oprah who the other person was that was talking to you?
No. And that's for legal reasons.
Okay.
She eventually found out, but initially I did not tell her,
which was also
a problem.
Can you tell us now, or is it still?
Barbara Walters.
Yeah. So it's not like you heard from, Susie Smith and, Duluth, Montana or something. It was a pretty big name, so you do listen when those two powerful women taught, and there you are in between these two immovable, incredible forces.
Yeah, and I did tell Barbara Walters no, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Now, in the industry, you know, there's also that little undercurrent of who's going to get it first.
Uh-huh.
You know, and in the moment, I was the next best thing. And so after a year, I did go and do my show with Barbara Walters and Buena Vista, ABC, and it was a disaster.
Really?
It was a disaster. It was horrible. Not so much what was presented on the stage. And then the other part of it was that people don't realize was I was shot my show in New York. I started shooting my show on April 25th, on August 25th, and then we had 9/11.
Oh, wow.
So between what was going on in New York City and just the fact that the producers of that show did not honor me, They wouldn't allow me to show my books on stage, on my show, couldn't refer to any of my work. I had 13 titles, and they wouldn't refer to any of my work. I mean, I didn't even have an office. So I can look at it and say they were horrible. I can look at it and say they treated me badly. I'm a victim. But what I've learned, and particularly as a practitioner of EFT, is that if it comes into your world, it's vibrating in your body.
Mm-hmm,
it has
right.
come to you by energetic invitation, which mm-hmm. is one of the reasons that I got into EFT when I came to understand that and knew that this was a technology that could be used to change your internal energy.
Yeah.
So I had an internal energy where I was historically accustomed to being abused, to being dishonored and disrespected and treated badly. I didn't get that at Oprah.
Yes, that is your history. When you have a history of people taking advantage of you or disrespecting you or abusing you, whatever it might be, that becomes your belief system. And you mentioned to me that your belief was, when I ask for what I want, I get in trouble.
Yes, I had that going on, and I thought I had outgrown it. Surprise,
yeah.
you
yeah,
know.
So, it's not a close thing.
So when I went to her and asked for what I wanted, I got in trouble.
Big time.
Yeah, I got in trouble. She couldn't hear me. She didn't know me, and it was misinterpreted.
So this whole program ended up being, you were supposed to go on with Oprah initially and talk about your new book, mm-hmm. Peace from Broken Pieces, but it ends up being a reconciliation between you and Oprah. Is that correct?
Yeah, 11 years.
So what,
11 years.
Which is amazing in itself. We'll talk about that reconciliation, but how did you guys get connected again?
She called me. Her producers called me. She saw the ad for my new book in a magazine, and she called me and asked me to be a guest on the show.
Wow.
We thought that this conversation would only be brief,
mm-hmm.
but it ended up being the whole hour. Because the truth of the matter is we care about each other deeply. You only fight with people you care about.
That's true, yeah.
And as hurt as I was, she was angry.
Mm.
And as angry as I was, she was hurt.
That's an interesting observation. And so you're coming from the same place but from a different perspective.
Yes. Yes, different perspectives. So we had to talk it. We had to work it through. You know, there aren't many powerful women of color in this country.
Right.
You know, and when we do come together, and Oprah Winfrey and myself, or Dr. Maya Angelou and myself, you know, it's important that we maintain a certain sisterhood
mm-hmm.
because we are demonstrations not just to women of color but to all women. How to stand and be in your power with someone who is in their power. That's important,
really?
Particularly for women.
Yes, and I understand, like I said, I haven't seen this the show, but from what I'm hearing from people and the questions that people have emailed me they want to ask you, it really is an amazing thing how it's not how that you stood up to her. You just stood in the same space with, here's what somebody said, this conversation was very important to see the courage it takes to be honest, authentic, and persistent in resolving an issue, and that you were masterful at it.
Oh, well, thank you.
No, nice.
You know, our authentic identity is masterful.
Yes.
It really is. But we spend so much time behind the mask and the fears and the control and whatever else we make up when we're alone in our head without adult supervision.
Mm-hmm.
We spend so much time, you know, standing behind those things until we miss the mastery of our authentic self.
Right.
But when love is involved, when you love somebody, when you care about somebody, your best defense is defenselessness.
Oh, that's good. Say that again.
Your best defense is defenselessness. That
yes.
means don't defend anything. Speak your heart, speak your mind, be authentic, and don't defend.
Uh-huh. Which is hard for people to do, because what comes out is, yeah, but you said, or all I wanted to say was, but you misunderstood, and it's usually about a non-accountable, being defensive is being non-accountable generally, and that's not saying that it's not okay to state your point of view, but there's a difference in being authentic and being defensive.
Well, you know, you taught me something, my teacher.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
And it's called bundling baggage,
yeah.
Which is an EFT technique.
Mm-hmm.
And in the EFT, you get to vent. You get to tell your story as you're tapping and move the energy out.
Yeah.
And what happens when people don't tap, they get stuck in the story.
Yes, that's right.
So they keep saying the same thing over, okay, so I said that, now what? You
yeah,
know?
Right.
And but with the bundling baggage, which I didn't even know back then,
mm-hmm.
but I came to understand how, okay, let me just tell a story once, tap while I'm saying it, and get this energy out. Because part of it is that we just want to be heard.
Right.
And we think that someone not hearing us is somehow an affront to our personage.
Mm-hmm.
And really, it could be the block in their consciousness. It was clear today that Oprah believed that she had said things to me that I never heard. And I said things to her, even on the show, that she couldn't hear.
Yeah, because we come from it from our perspective and through our own filters. Now, I mentioned to you yesterday or so that she had just had Roseanne Barr on the show.
Uh-huh.
Roseanne Barr was coming at Oprah, was mad at Oprah for something, and they had a breakup too for about the same period of time. 99 must not have been a good year for Oprah or her guests. And in that, Roseanne swore that Oprah cheated at a game, at a arm wrestling, and she said, you moved your hand up, your elbow off the table, and then you stood up, and you pressured me, and it was some charity thing. They don't go around arm wrestling usually. And Oprah said, really? And then she said, okay, roll the tape. Well, it was Roseanne who came up off with her arm off the table and stood up, and Roseanne was floored. If she hadn't seen that video, she would have never believed it. She would have stood there and said, no, Oprah, it was you, not me. Are you kidding me? Because her perspective was Oprah had overpowered her. And so when it's that perspective. And how you were able to step back from this in a way that you were able to communicate with Oprah and resolve this is pretty extraordinary.
Well, I love her. I love her.
Mm-hmm.
I've loved her from the very first moment I've seen her because our lives run so parallel. And she has always been a demonstration to me of what is possible for me.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And she was close enough, even on television, because she started in Baltimore.
Oh, did she?
She was close enough that I could say, I can do that. You know, I can really do that.
Mm.
So I love her, and I put the relationship ahead of the television show or anything else. So it was important for me to understand what happened.
Mm-hmm.
But in understanding what happened so that I could be in relationship with her, I followed a path that allowed me to heal myself.
Oh, and that's so healthy, and that's how you got to where you are now. You're
yes.
so strong and so courageous and so authentic, and that comes from where you've been. So while that history gets on our way, that stuff, it also makes us much stronger.
And well, it also comes from the fact that I'm almost 60 and I can't remember. So some things I just have to tell the truth about because I could forget to lie.
That's true. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, we can't lie at our age. We can't lie for what we had for breakfast.
That's right. Did I eat breakfast?
That's right. Well, here's a question someone emailed earlier today wanted to ask you about the subject, and then I want to move on to, you know, your book and some other things. But this one said, I watched the Oprah show today and was so impressed with your honesty and courage. Did you do some tapping before the show to prepare yourself?
Absolutely. I almost tapped my eyeball out.
What did you do?
I was that in my defenselessness is my defense. I
mm-hmm.
tapped on that.
Uh-huh.
I was tapping in as opposed to tapping out.
Uh-huh.
And I tapped on the experience that I wanted to have, which was total freedom from any anger and any hurt. I tapped on that there would be peace and connection between a peaceful connection between me and Oprah, and it happened within the first 7 minutes.
Oh wow, that's great!
Yeah, it happened within the first 7 minutes.
Well, then what was the rest of the hour? But you stayed on the subject, so
going back and forth. So because she had questions, you know.
Yeah.
She had questions, and I had questions, and it just needed to be resolved. You know, it's just like when you're in relationship with your partner and your partner cheats,
mm-hmm.
and then they make you make up, but you know, 3 months later, you look over and you just want to gouge their eye out with a plastic spoon. You know, and you're like, okay, and you have to be available for that conversation. You have to be, because it's, we don't understand that our experiences get lodged in our energy. You know, we have the physical body, we have the energetic body, we have the emotional body. So, yes, I forgive you, and we're going to make our relationship or our marriage work. But then I look at you one day, you know, and I think I smell a whiff of strange perfume. I have to come ask you a question. So it was mostly that, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, just for people's own edification, to really understand the power of television, because we watch it, and I think sometimes we think, you know, that this thing is real. Mm-hmm. But they flipped the show. Because it actually took us longer to get to resolution than it shows up on the screen.
Oh, really?
They put the resolution up early, and then we just had the conversation.
Oh, that's interesting. We forget about editing. You know, we edit our own thoughts, mm-hmm. but we forget because of the power of the media, whether it's online or on TV or radio, those things are all edited, and you can make a simple conversation look horrible or vice versa.
Well, it was good because it made it for the people viewing. I mean, we had to walk through this thing and get to resolution, which we got to. You know, in the first 7 minutes, we got to the point where she understood that I had not betrayed her. Mm-hmm. I had not left her show to go off and do a show with someone else. She got that. But then we kept going through the unfolding as we both recalled it. And so what they did, however, was they took the final resolution and put it up closer so that the rest of the conversation would make sense.
That's good. That's good editing.
Yes, good editing.
Probably keeps people tuned in because they're going, I don't want to watch an hour of fighting, although, gee, let's wait and see who pulls whose hair out first.
Yeah, and we didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
You know, we had to do it that way. We had to have that conversation that way, but for the viewer, you know, in respect of the viewer, we don't want them to say these two women are out there off their rocker, you know. And there was one scene there where I was banging on the chair, and I had 7 friends with me. I took the God Squad with me. That's what I call them. That's my God Squad. They cover my back. They look for me. They pray for me. And I was banging on the chair, and one of my friends said, I thought you were going to slap Oprah, and I kept saying, praying.
God.
She said, God, just let her bang on the chair. Just let her bang on the chair.
Well, that would have made headlines. You know,
oh, God.
Woman bitch slaps Oprah,
mm-hmm.
on
right.
TV. You would have been right up there with Lindsay Lohan and those people.
Oh, God forbid. You know, but here's something else that I hope people get from it, you know, because the thing that I've always known is that my work is good, and I've always said that to her. I knew my work was good. I knew that. I mastered what I do. But I didn't know she wanted me for me.
Oh.
I thought she only wanted the work.
Isn't that nice? She wanted you for you. So she did see beneath your talent and saw who you were.
Yes, she did, but she never communicated that.
Oh, isn't that a shame? This is a real lesson for open, honest communication. I was just
Absolutely.
Talking to a client today about that. In a marriage, you cannot have a good marriage with all kinds of positive things going for you if you don't have open communication.
And complete conversation.
Yes.
See, she and I had an incomplete conversation, and that's what really made this thing look the way it does.
With a lot of input from other people and writing, reading between the lines. And so it was a lot of miscommunication. You know, had you had a conversation 12 years ago, this would have been healed a long time ago. But you said something important earlier, maybe yesterday, that you weren't really ready for all of this stuff going on in your life.
No, it happened so quickly. You know, there's an old adage, you cannot live beyond the level of your self-esteem.
Oh, that's a good one. I haven't heard
you know?
That.
And I knew what my life had been up to that point, and it had become manageable, and I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But then I rose into a place, and it's, for me it was television. For some people it's a promotion on their job, or it's a new relationship, or it is whatever. You know, when people rise, they you're not familiar with what this new arena is.
Sure.
And you're trying to look good and get it done, and you don't know what you're doing. Inside, you feel lost.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I didn't have a brother. I didn't have a sister at that time. My brother had passed. My sister had passed. I didn't have anybody. So here I am, famous, getting richer by the minute, okay?
Yeah.
And I'm, like, still feeling like the old, poor, abused little girl from the projects in Brooklyn.
Well,
I couldn't figure it out.
It's just a huge shift. You see that happening with the celebrities all the time. They move so quickly, and then they end up turning to
Lindsay
drugs.
Lohan.
Yes, exactly.
Michael Jackson.
Yeah.
Britney Spears.
Oh, on and on. And now
and,
Miley Cyrus.
Yes,
but
and
they,
so I'm hoping that people see that these people, we're looking at they're crazy, and we're thinking there's something wrong with them,
mm-hmm.
when the truth is these people are in trouble.
Uh-huh.
And we're not taught to avoid trouble. We're taught to handle it once it shows up.
Mm-hmm. That's true. And we learn from our past experience how to handle it. Sometimes it's screaming at people. Sometimes it's walking away. Sometimes it's turning to drugs or alcohol or hitting
food,
somebody.
Sex, whatever.
Food, yeah. Well, you had mentioned two things I wanted to bring up. One, being crazy. You mentioned that you were crazy.
Yeah.
And the second was your background. And I don't think people know. Maybe they might think, you mentioned the projects in Brooklyn. And tell us about that. You weren't born with a silver spoon in your mouth.
I didn't have a spoon at all.
One, maybe.
Oh, maybe I should say I had a spoon. We didn't have a fork because if you have a spoon, you know you're getting liquid food.
Yeah.
We didn't have a fork because there was nothing to stick it into. You know, just I came up in poverty-driven dysfunction. I don't know how else to describe it because I no longer say my mother did this, my father did that. My mother was the other woman. My father was a married man. My mother was the other woman.
Mm.
And she was an alcoholic who died of breast cancer when I was about 2.5 years old.
Wow.
And nobody bothered to tell me that my mother was dead.
Wow.
So I was raised thinking that my stepmother was my mother. And nobody liked my stepmother. So here I am growing up with a mother that I love, I thought was my mother, that I loved, that nobody liked. And because my father was, my father was a street hustler, a gambler, and in New York, what we call a number runner.
Mm.
And so we were constantly broke, constantly in and out of just all kinds of dysfunction. And he was a womanizer. He had my mother and my stepmother and Susie Bell around the corner and Miss Esther up the street. And the pathology of my family of origin, and when I say pathology, I mean that underlying thing that causes disease.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The pathology of my family of origin was the women were submissive and quiet and repressed, and anything the men did was okay. You made excuses for them, you tolerated, you accommodated, and you accepted their bad behavior. That's what I saw. I saw my stepmother do it with my father. I saw my aunt do it with my uncle. My grandmother didn't even have a man, so I didn't know what that was about, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, I grew up in all of this. I had my first child when I was 14 years old.
Wow.
14. She died when she was 6 months old.
Mm.
I had my, and you know, I wasn't even present for that. I just happened to be pregnant and happened to have a baby, and the baby happened to die.
Wow.
I'm telling you, just not present at all. And then I had my second child when I was 16. I was married in 19 in an abusive marriage, spent 9 years in an abusive marriage, had my third child when I was 21 years old, and then at 29, you know, Ford got a better idea, and so did I. You know, I left out of marriage, went to college at 29, graduated summa cum laude in 3.5 years, went to law school. And just as I was graduating college, I discovered that my stepmother was not my mother.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
she had lupus. She had lupus, but they didn't know what it was for a long time. And during some tests that they were doing at the hospital, the question came up. And I'm like, you know, some people, you're crazy. But because when she came home, she was disabled, we applied for Social Security for her. And they put her on Social Security, and her check came, and I went and cashed her check, paid her little bills and things like that. this is my mother, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, her sister decided to tell me. Actually, she didn't decide to tell me. She called Social Security Administration and said that I had forged her check.
Oh.
And so when the Social Security officers came to arrest me for forgery, I said, this was my mother. I was taking care of her business.
Yeah.
You know, what? And they said, the Social Security officers were the ones who told me that that was not my mother. That's how I found out. I was 30 years old.
Wow. And how did that affect you?
Well, I lost pieces of my brain. I was just, what do you do? I don't even know what I did. But you know what I discovered? Having been raped at age 9 by
my
uncle,
gosh.
I spent a lot of time outside of my body. I hope your audience understands what I mean.
Yeah.
That means I could walk through an experience, be in an experience, and have absolutely no connection to it. The psychological term for it would be disassociative.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And that's how I lived most of my life. So this was just another thing. And for me, because of the dysfunction that I grew up in, the physical and the emotional abuse that I grew up in, I learned how to take a hit and move on.
Mm-hmm.
Take a hit, you move on. You get raped, the person denies it, you move on. You get beaten until all the skin is off your back, you take that hit, you move on. Because the pathology in my family was to act as if nothing was going on. And that's what it was. Everybody knew that this woman wasn't my mother. Why wouldn't somebody tell me? Everyone knew my uncle was an alcoholic. Nobody said anything. Everyone knew that my father was a womanizer and that my paternal grandmother who raised me was, well, we didn't know then. I mean, now it would be called bipolarism. She was crazy as hell.
Oh, my goodness.
And they left me with her for her to find all sorts of creative ways to beat me, torture me. Oh, please. It was just wonderfulness, okay?
Yeah.
And so by the time I get to now 30 and I find this out, it was just around the same time that I found this thing called God. Because I hit my paternal grandmother was a Native American.
Really?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. A Jisleki, which you would say Cherokee.
Oh, no kidding.
She was Jisleki. And so she spent all day long in the Pentecostal church and all night long praying to the moon.
Did you say Bane?
No, praying, you know, because that was her culture. She was born on a reservation.
Yeah. Wow.
And again, another hypocrisy, another confusion. So I don't know if Jesus lives in the moon or if he's up on the cross. I don't know what's going on with this boy. But around 30, I found this thing called God, this incredibly loving presence that honored me and accepted me, and I started on this spiritual journey. So that is really what saved me from the nut house, from years on a therapist's sofa, and I just began to devour anything that spoke to the presence of God, God in me. But I still had all of this energy. So that's how I became a spiritual technician.
Wow. When you said you have all, that's how you still had all this energy, you mean the negative energy?
The negative energy in my body. Because feelings buried alive do not die. They don't die.
Right.
You just learn how to bury them.
Mm-hmm.
And they can be triggered at any time. So I was still having problems in relationships with men, betrayals by women, all sorts of poverty and dysfunction in my finances. And so on this spiritual journey, I began to look at meditation and explore Reiki and understand, TM, Transcendental Meditation, and reading the Bible and reading the Bhagavad Gita. And in 1978, I was introduced to the Course in Miracles when it was, this was like some blasphemy.
Yeah.
I was reading my Course in Miracles by candlelight under the bed, And so it was really the spiritual work and the spiritual technologies that started me in releasing the energy and understanding who I was from the inside out. That's been a 28-year journey.
Well, and a tough one, it sounds like, too. But the interesting thing, Ilonja, is that you did get through it. And I know that it stops a lot of people. I hear stories. It's my business as a coach, a facilitator, to hear these life stories that you just said. And almost every time I hear one like yours, I think, oh, my gosh, this is the worst one. You know, I thought I had a terrible childhood. But then I hear somebody else say, oh, this is really awful. How could a person go through that? How could a person believe in God after going through that? And how can you get to a place of redemption and spirituality after having gone through that? So one would ask you, what do you say to people when they say, well, how come you're not in the gutter someplace or a prostitute or on skid row or being a victim? How did you make that complete 180 turn?
Well, I think two things saved me. Number one, I've always had a big mouth.
Literally and figuratively.
Literally and figuratively.
So you're out.
And as a child, there was not much that went on that I didn't have something to say about, so I didn't stuff a lot. I would get the hell beat out of me for saying it, but I'm going to say it. So that was, I really do believe, Lindsay, that saved me, because had I stuffed all of that pain, I too would have breast cancer or some crazy thing, you know. And my mother was an alcoholic. She kept me drunk in the womb. So when I was born, I never drank. So I never had an escape, you know, drinking, smoking. I did smoke for many, many, many years. But, you know, once I put that down, there was nothing for me to escape. So my feelings were always being triggered, always coming up and always being cleared. The other thing that saved me was from Native American tradition, I had learned that every soul is born with a purpose. And no matter what happens in your life, you are fulfilling your purpose. Now, even when your purpose doesn't make sense, what's the purpose in getting raped? What's the purpose in being beaten? What's the purpose in being betrayed and left? Mm-hmm. I didn't know what the purpose was until around 29, 30, when I said, oh, my God, I am a teacher. I am a teacher. And these experiences that I'm having, I can teach them to other people.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell into my purpose.
Ah.
And ultimately went to law school because I wanted to, you know, teach and help people who were in bad situations. And 3 years out of law school, I said, wait a minute, hold up. I'm not supposed to be teaching man's law. I am supposed to be teaching God's law.
Wow, that's profound.
Yeah, and that's how it unfolded for me.
Well, that's quite a story and quite a transformation. So then what role did EFT play in your life? When did that come along, and how, if you'd already cleared everything out, then what role did it play?
No, I hadn't cleared anything out. Otherwise, I wouldn't have been tapping last night when my grandson worked my last good nerve. I think it was probably around 1994, 95, when a friend of mine who had studied or was studying kinesiology learned a system called AFT, Attractive Field Technology.
Mm-hmm.
And she taught me how to tap using the AFT process.
Oh, I hadn't heard of that.
Yeah, but it was just too much to remember. You know,
TFT is a lot.
It's
a lot of protocol.
It's above the ear, and it's over there. Blah, blah, blah. So I did it for a couple of years with her. And then, I'm not really sure when, but somewhere around 2000, 99, 2000, I don't know. You know, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear.
Uh-huh.
I bumped into Gary Craig's work in EFT, and I said, oh, I know this. This is like AFT. And I went through the tapes and the thing and just followed him around, and, you know, not him personally, but his work. And then in 2002, my daughter was diagnosed with a rare form of colon cancer.
Mm.
And I had known that AFT was very good for eliminating disease or the energy of disease. And so I taught her the EFT when she was doing chemo. She never lost a strand of hair. She never experienced any nausea at all.
Amazing.
Never, because we tapped every single morning. We tapped in the hospital. We tapped on her way to surgery. We tapped every single morning, and that's how I got renewed in it. Then after she passed in 2003, I had to tap myself a new brain because, you know, the loss of a child for me, I can't speak for any other mother. I just hold them in my heart with compassion. It was unspeakable. And I was suicidal. I was suicidal. And so I started tapping, I want to live. I want to live. I'm going to live. I want to live. I'm not going to kill myself. I'm going to live. I can live through this. I can make it through. I was tapping just that, just that.
Wow.
I didn't know. I didn't do no gamut point.
Yeah.
I didn't do no under the eye. I didn't
yeah.
do a setup phrase. I just tapped my little heart out, because I was going to take myself out.
Wow. Well, that's what brought me to EFT initially, that, you know, I was going to take myself out too. And so you got through that, obviously, you're here.
Mm-hmm.
And then what role did EFT have in dealing with the grief of the loss of your daughter, you know? So
I was tapping that out. And that's how I got back into it. By now the industry had grown.
Mm-hmm.
So as I go online and I'm starting to see the EFT site and they had all kind of articles and then I started working on guilt. Because as a mom, when your kid dies, you just, you know, it's like, Jesus, I fed her too many green peas,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So I started tapping on guilt, and then I was looking. Now I'm looking at the Oprah situation. Because the thing I love about tapping is if you tap consciously enough, if you clear one thing, something else pops.
That's right, yeah.
So now I'm working. The Oprah thing came back up for me. I'm tapping that out, tapping it out. I ended a 40-year relationship. Oh, my God, you want to talk about tap.
Wow.
I wanted to just slap my eyes off.
With a man, you mean?
Yeah, with a man. What do you think, fruit?
Well, I could have been a girlfriend or something.
No.
40 years.
Yeah, we started dating when I was 13 years old.
Oh, my God. Dating at 13.
You know, just playing around.
Oh, yeah.
You know, always in love. And he went off and married somebody else. I went off and married somebody else. We came back together, spent about 9 years together, separated again, came back together. So in and out of our relationship over the course of 40 years until in 1994 we got married. And then as my career is soaring, my marriage is falling apart, then my daughter got sick. And in the midst of my daughter being sick, he decided that he didn't want to be married anymore. And I really didn't even care.
Yeah.
You don't want me,
sure?
Goodbye. I'm not going to choose between. I'm Mama Bear right now. I can't choose between you and my child. So he, we divorced. And right in the midst of the Oprah stuff, it was after Oprah, my daughter being sick, which was a blessing because I never had to really deal with the trauma of ending a 40-year relationship. I didn't.
Yeah, there's something bigger. That's interesting, man.
Yeah, because she was sick, then she passed, and I lost my mind, and then I went and did Starting Over.
Oh, yeah, so there was just like no break in there for you.
No, there was no break, and it was a good thing, because 40 years in love with a person, and I still love him, I do. I will always love him. I just now can choose not to be in relationship with him.
Yeah.
Because the truth of the matter that I learned through tapping is that he facilitated the dysfunction of my history.
Interesting.
He facilitated the dysfunction of my history because I was never good enough for him. I could never do it right. He was very judgmental, very critical. And so what attracted me to him, I thought was this love and compassion, was really I was trying to get from him the acknowledgement I never got from my father.
Oh, interesting. And for 40 years.
40 years.
You sought that.
And then as I healed my need for external validation, the marriage no longer served its purpose, and it had to fall apart.
Well, that was a wise thing to do. It's hard to get out of a toxic relationship, and sometimes it takes us a long time to figure that out because we say, well, I really love him or her. I really love that person, and ignoring the part that they're toxic for us.
Well, you know, it's funny because we divorced, and then I was in relationship with somebody else, and what I recognized was he was the same thing in a different pair of pants.
Yeah, that's true.
They tried to trick me, Lindsay. They tried to trick me, but I tapped my way out.
Good for you. Yeah, that happens all the time. We end up marrying our abusive fathers or abusive mothers in a different way, or women keep saying, how come I keep attracting the same kind of man? It's those patterns that live within us, that energy that you talked about, that's going to stay unless we get rid of it, unless we do something with it.
And the beliefs that are in those patterns, and my pattern was because I'm not good enough and because I'm not enough, my father wasn't available to me. So I continue to attract men that I could never do enough for, be enough for, and they were emotionally unavailable. So I left the man who was emotionally unavailable and became involved with the man who was physically unavailable.
Uh-huh.
It was a long-distance relationship.
Mm.
So it took me a minute, but I said, wait a minute, hold up. This is the same thing.
Yeah, this isn't working.
I know you. Let me just tap you out of my brain and tap that energy out. So, yeah. I just hope your audience understands the power, the beauty, and the value of this gift called EFT. It is a gift from the heavens.
Oh.
Why do I say it's a gift? Because it's user-friendly. You don't need nothing but your fingers.
That's right.
You don't have to go nowhere and buy nothing.
That's right.
You don't need a piece of paper. You know, it's very forgiving. If you miss a point or you don't say the right thing, you may have to tap a little longer, but, eventually you're going to get there.
Yep.
And it gives us a level of control over how we choose our healing and how we activate our healing.
Mm-hmm.
And, I sought you out. I came all the way from the East Coast to the West Coast, and we had done some work together before that. And I'm not ashamed to say it. I'm not afraid to say it. If I need you today or tomorrow, I would call you and say, let's tap this out.
And I'd be there. I would be there for you. Yeah, I fell in love with you when the first time I heard your voice. I didn't know you had been on Oprah or that you were famous, or I didn't know your history. I got you as being this great person. And I just heard for the first time today that one of the common threads we had, that was that EFT kept us both alive. You tapped when your daughter died. I tapped when I was thinking about taking my life, and that's what transformed me. And so we're both here today as a result of that. No wonder we're such big fans of it, right?
Yeah.
Well, I have a great question that somebody asked that ties in with what we've been talking about, and you and I have brushed on this too, and that is your faith. This person said, with all that you've experienced in your life, I know that your faith helped you through. Do you think it's okay for a person of faith to tap?
Oh, what? I tapped the Lord's Prayer. I tapped the Lord's Prayer. I'm serious.
Yeah.
The Lord's Prayer, the 23rd Psalm, the 91st Psalm. I had to go through an experience with the IRS. And IRS agents are wonderful children of God, cleverly disguised as spawns from space. Okay. I was terrified of the IRS, terrified. Got into some tax trouble because of some bad accounting advice and had to go to the IRS. And I got to the 91st Psalm, and I tapped the entire psalm into my body.
Oh, my God.
So that by the time I got there, I was so calm. Because I was abiding in the shadow of the Almighty, and I had rest there. And I knew he would rescue me. I knew that my creator, my source, would rescue me from the trap of this force. I tapped the 91st Psalm. If you are a person of faith, whether it's Christianity or Judaism or Islam or Buddhism or whatever, if you go to your sacred book, I can almost guarantee you that you'll find a verse or a scripture or whatever it is that supports you in self-help and self-revelation, you know?
Mm-hmm.
In the Bible, Isaiah 60, the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me, for I have been anointed to bring good news. Well, if the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is upon me, then what I'm doing is powerful. I am made in the image and the likeness of the Creator of the universe. When we look at, you know, to heal thyself, know ye not that you are the temple of God and the Spirit of God is within you? So if the Spirit of God is within me, let me knock so I can get into that Spirit. Tapping for me is knocking.
That is interesting. That's an interesting and very clever reframe that makes so much sense when you articulate it like that. Very good. You are a wordsmith, Ilanya. You could be famous someday. I might get you one over.
I am an infopreneur.
That's a good line. Well, I want to ask you this question about God. I don't know if anybody else out there listening is interested in this, but I used to be very religious and was raised in a very strict Southern Baptist home. But I want to know your opinion on is God to you? We could spend a whole hour or more on this subject, that's for sure. Out there or within? How do you see that?
Within. And see, we're afraid to do certain things because we think God is out there mm-hmm. watching us when God is in here driving us.
Oh, I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel, too. I believe it's within. I don't think there's a guy in the sky with a beard or something. But I like the way you said it. Can you repeat that again?
I said that many of us, particularly those of us who have been religiously abused, mm-hmm. we believe that God is out there watching us. I hold to the belief that God is in here
driving us.
You know?
Yeah.
So the question becomes, do you drive? You know, do you want to drive or are you driven? And if God is in you, then you're driven. So every thought I have, the Creator knows. The Creator is mind. It is thought. It is energy.
Mm-hmm.
So the same way how AFT came to me to roll into EFT and save my daughter, she died with a head full of hair and never had nausea and never suffered some of the things that people on chemo suffer. We used to go to the chemo center with our crocheting and our books and coloring books. People would be looking at us like we're crazy as they're puking their guts out. We over there eating chicken and doing and coloring in the book.
Yeah.
So because God has grace. And the person that the Gary Craig, I don't know what his religious belief is, but I do know that the energy of the divine is within him. So when he brought forth this technology, it was the wisdom of the Creator within him. EFT and AFT and Reiki and, you know, we live in an energetic universe.
Right. Oh, yes. It's all about energy. And when you have that belief that it's God is within you, it's driving you, and that God is energy and we're energy, and then we can drive our own energy. If you connect the dots, we can clean up our past with tapping, and we can project and predict our future with tapping.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, and the clearer your energy is, the quicker you'll manifest, because God said, "Let there be light." Now he didn't have to do therapy; he didn't need no degree. He didn't have to have 50 people in agreement with him. He said, "Let there be light." That means the mind said, "This is something I want to create, and I can bring it forth." We are made in that same image and likeness. When our energy is clear, we can say the thing. We can speak it into existence. Speak it into existence. So
that's just incredible. Ilanya, I look up at the clock and I say, oh, my gosh, our time is almost up. And
okay.
I feel like I could go another, I could talk to you forever. But is there any, I want to make sure we give people your website. I'm not sure I did that. InnerVisionsWorldwide.com. I-N-N-E-R, Visions, plural, worldwide.com. And your book, how can we get a hold of piece from Broken Pieces?
You can go to my website, and there's a, you can click right through. It'll take you to Amazon, because InnerVisions is a not-for-profit educational institution, and you'll see all the classes that we do, the coaching that we do, the Institute for Personal Development. So when you buy a book through InnerVisions, it goes to Amazon, but InnerVisions will get the credit.
Oh, that's
sale. So don't be alarmed when you find yourself on the Amazon page.
Yeah. Hey, Ian, would you consider, now that you're on Oprah and you probably have your own show and who knows, but would you still consider coming back down here with the real people and doing another show with us in a few months?
Anytime. You are my teacher. How do I address you when I write you? Hey, coach.
Yeah, we can. That's right. We can dish some more stuff about Oprah and behind the scenes again. And, you know, I'm dying to just put, you know, on your bio, as seen on Oprah.
Yeah.
It was just so coincidental that this happened like this. But anyway, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on, and thank those that are listening. I'm just so happy for you that you and Oprah have reconciled. And
I'm just happy for me that I have good and positive energy in the world.
Yes, you do, and you're making such a difference in the world. And you're going to be on Oprah again next week.
Next week.
Amazing.
Station, yeah.
Yeah, amazing. So thank you again for joining us, and good luck with everything you do and the changes and differences you're making in the world. You're just my spiritual hero and personal hero. I just adore you.
Thank you. The feeling is mutual.
Thank you so much, Eve, for coming on.
Thank you.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, we had planned on doing some Q&A with Alanya at the end of this recording. Excuse me for the little glitch at the beginning. We had to record this earlier today because of some conflicts and the overwhelm from the Oprah show. Actually, it's probably overwhelm from being on this radio show, but I think it affected the Oprah interview. But so we're actually ending just a couple of minutes early. I wish I'd known that ahead of time, and we could have used that maybe for Q&A with Alanya, but it didn't look like it was going to work out. So I want to thank you all for joining us tonight, and really thank again Alanya for sharing her heart with us and her feelings, her spirituality, and her wonderful essence. She has been a great fan of EFT, and I've been a fan of hers for some time now. And I'm a fan of all of yours, too, for joining us. So I want to thank you all for joining us again. And please come back next week when we have the wonderful, incomparable Carol Look on our show. So good night, everybody, and we'll see you again on proeftradio.com.
Join us again every Wednesday night at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, as Lindsay has conversations with the top talent in the world of energy psychology. Our intention is to help you tap away your challenges and tap into physical and emotional freedom. Find replays of these shows on the media page at proeft.com. And again, thank you for joining us.